From the KPFK studios in Southern California,
it's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
The work of our next guest is something Ralph has referenced a number of times on this program in the 2 years we've been doing the show, as we've talked about the state of healthcare in this country, which we do a lot. So I'm so glad we're finally going to get a chance to meet and speak with him. His name is Malcolm Sparrow, and he's a professor of the practice of public management at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Professor Sparrow served 10 years with the British Police Service, rising to the rank of Detective Chief Inspector. He has conducted internal affairs investigations, commanded a tactical firearms unit, and has extensive experience with criminal investigation. His research interests include regulatory and enforcement strategy, fraud control, corruption control, and operational risk management. He's also a patent-holding inventor in the area of computerized fingerprint analysis. He holds an MA in mathematics from Cambridge University, an MPA from the Kennedy School, and a PhD in applied mathematics from Kent University at Canterbury. Among his many publications is the book License to Steal: How Fraud Bleeds America's Healthcare System. Welcome to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, Professor Malcolm Sparrow.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to Professor Malcolm Sparrow, the hands-down expert on healthcare fraud, not just fraud on Medicare and Medicaid, but billing fraud. And before we get the most recent news of a fraud ring that has been broken, Professor Sparrow, just give us an estimate, the most conservative estimate, in terms of billions of dollars of computerized billing fraud and abuse in both the private and public healthcare industries.
Well, this is something that we actually don't know. The government has published annual estimates of what they call the improper payment rate for the Medicare program. The latest estimate says 12.1% for Medicare and 9.8% for Medicaid. So we're in the region of 10% across both of these programs. And the two of them together have now just gone above $1 trillion this fiscal year. So if you imagine that the same level of problems are pervasive through these public programs, you're looking at $100 billion in that domain. And if the same were to apply across the entire healthcare industry, which now costs us all $2.5 trillion, then you'd be at $250 billion. But I have reason to believe that the estimates that we get from the government are really quite conservative and a little bit comforting, because they're based on audit methods that are really not sufficient to detect fraud. And everyone associated with those measurement programs knows that, and that has been admitted by government officials in public. So the real number is higher than 12%, but I can't say what it is.
Well, as you know, over 20 years ago, the Government Accounting Office of the U.S. Congress estimated about 10% of all that people spend on health care and the taxpayers spend on health care goes down the drain because of computerized billing, fraud, and abuse. Is it fair to say it's a conservative rock bottom level, and we'll get to how they figure all these things out in Washington, that at least $300 billion a year goes down the drain?
I think that would be reasonable. 10%, if it was 10%, would be $250 billion, so it's very close to the mark.
And you just mentioned to me a fraud ring that was broken in terms of fraud on Medicare by government investigators. Can you elaborate that?
Well, I just got the email about 10 minutes before you called. Federal officials are announcing today a takedown of 301 medical professionals who have allegedly stolen from Medicare more than $900 million. So they are claiming in the announcement today that this is the biggest Medicare fraud takedown ever.
Just consider that, listeners. Compare that with bank robberies, apart from the violence involved with bank robberies. But this is $900 million takedown. This is one conglomerate fraud. So crime in the streets, in terms of money, robbing banks, is tiny compared to crime in the suites, in terms of ripping off the taxpayer, representing Medicare and Medicaid, as well as private insurance companies. Let me ask you this question. How much is dedicated to enforcement here? You once wrote that the best way to have an adequate prosecution capability is to estimate the amount of fraud and donate 1% of that amount to investigations and prosecutions. Can you elaborate that?
Yes, I can. And I think I might even recommend 2 or 3%. At the moment, the proportion of the funds paid out in the Medicare program, if you look at the level of spending on program integrity, on all of the lawyers, on all of the FBI agents, the total budget dedicated to integrity is currently sitting just under 0.3%. I think the last time I did the calculations, turns out to be 29 cents. Being spent for every $100 that's paid out. And if you are an ordinary person going shopping, the question is, well, if you're going to spend $100, how much would you be prepared to spend to actually see what you got and to check that it was a genuine article and if it's medical services, that it's, the diagnosis is correct and it's appropriate care? I can imagine that I'd be happy to spend maybe $2 or $3 per $100 just to make sure that the other $97 I was getting value for money. So they are at one-tenth of the level that I would recommend, which means I think it's the wrong scale.
Yes, because Congress, of course, holds a tight rein on the prosecution budgets of these economic criminals and fraud specialists. But tell our listeners how much the taxpayer will get in return for every dollar of law enforcement.
Well, they actually quote these numbers every time they do the budgeting. And I think the current, well, the most recent claimed return ratio is 10 to 1. So for every dollar you spend at the margin on checking and on auditing and on investigation, then they say you're getting $10 back. And an economist would say, well, in that case, why aren't you spending more? One of the peculiar reasons why it's not easy to suddenly beef up the level of controls in the Medicare program is that the funds being spent from the Medicare Trust Fund are legally separate from the administrative budget. So they sort of go through different committees, which means, you know, if you want to spend an extra dollar in the discretionary budget on controls, but you'll save $10 from the trust fund, there actually isn't anybody legally in the position to do the return on investment calculation.
Well, you've testified for Congress and consulted the various government agencies over the years, Professor Malcolm Sparrow from Harvard University, the author of License to Steal. Are there any champions in Congress, consumer advocate types, that are really bringing to bear some pressure to get the appropriations committees in Congress to give more law enforcement money to the federal agencies? And are there any politicians who are making this an issue in campaigns that have come to your ear?
I think there have been from time to time, but what I don't hear is a concerted and sustained pressure from people that really understand the structure of this problem. Can I just tell you a little bit about my reaction to this massive takedown today?
Yes.
When we hear these things, you know, 300 medical professionals arrested, $900 million or $300 million or however many it is, the government's message always seems to be, well, this demonstrates our zero tolerance for fraud. But if you, for those of us that sort of watch the program and the way it operates, there's a rhythm to these things. So we get these big takedowns now like clockwork about once every 3 months. And the image I have is, you know, the fishing boat goes out into the seas of Medicare fraud and then it comes back once every 3 months and dumps out on the quayside a bucket load of big, fat criminal fish. And when they dump them out like that, it's really quite a public spectacle and makes you appreciate how hard the fishermen are working. And then it takes them a while to process those cases. They head off out to sea. They start doing new investigations. And 3 months later, they come home and do it all again. And when you watch this rhythm, you get the sense that the only constraint on the number of fish being caught is the number of fishermen out there and the size of their nets. There is clearly a sea teeming with big, fat criminal fish, and there's no shortage of them at all. The only issue is how fast they can reel them in.
Well, what is the private insurance companies who are paying out more than they should when they are defrauded? What are they doing about it?
This was a fascinating piece for me in my original field research, because when I went to examine all of the control systems in operation, the people funding my research sent me to public programs and to private insurers and to not-for-profits, that is the Blue Cross Blue Shield plans. And I was expecting that the private companies would do very substantially better because they're driven by their bottom line. And I was very surprised to discover they all use basically the same sets of controls. They're all vulnerable in precisely the same way. And you wonder, well, why isn't the private sector bottom line imperative, driving much better controls? I think the answer is private companies are very worried about the shareholder confidence and bad news about levels of fraud or integrity problems in their own payment programs are very bad news for them. So they're reluctant to alarm the shareholders, and they count their medical clinics and doctors and hospitals as the precious business resource available to them to deliver care. And they don't want it tarnished in any way publicly. So there's a lot of secrecy when they do find problems. There's a lot of inadequate exit controls as they usher some people out. And there's a lot of reputational protection. And all of that really mitigates against being open and honest about the nature of the problems they face.
And you've written that this same disincentive to come clean with the massive significance and quantity of medical fraud operates with government officials too, right?
I think it does. The pathology of fraud, which is the name of the first chapter in my book, says there's never any good news about fraud. If you don't detect it, of course, that's bad news. But if you do detect it, that's bad news, too, because it suggests you've got real problems in your program. I think it takes an enormous amount of political courage to really want to know the truth and to be prepared to express it publicly. And I'm always hopeful this is a time when we might again revive our optimism, because we'll soon have a new administration. And one of the things that I notice is that in the very first year of a new political administration, you sometimes can get a dose of honesty about how bad things are. The reason being they're not responsible yet for the way things are. By the second year, of course, they become responsible, and then all of a sudden...
And they become overly sensitive, you're saying, too. They often say how much they've recovered in Medicare fraud through their prosecutions and investigations. What's your figure on, out of the $100 billion that are estimated to be defrauded from Medicare and Medicaid, how much do they get back every year?
It's varied over the last few years. It's normally in the range $2 to $4 billion. Last fiscal year, 2015, the figures are $1.9 billion recovered, and with some work coming to fruition from the previous year, $2.4 billion altogether. But you put that sounds like an awful lot of hard work, and yes, it is. It's successful prosecutions and successful investigations. But to put that in context, the government itself is reporting $44 billion in improper payments in the Medicare program, $29 billion in the Medicaid program. So the $2-3 billion recovered is actually a very small piece of the overall loss rate.
And if the Congress gave them $8 billion in enforcement, they could recover $80 billion.
Yes, I think to make a serious dent in this problem, if you're going to try and do that through investigation and prosecution, you'd need to have at least 10 times as much effort going into that.
Let's go across the border to Canada for just a minute. They have a single-payer system, full Medicare for all, everybody in, nobody out, free choice of doctor and hospital. Do they have billing fraud abuses at our scale? And if not, why not?
They don't have the American scale. I have spent time with Canadian Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association. Yes, they've had one of those for more than a decade because they've got a number of problems. Like the British system, which is also single payer, there's private insurance that grows up around the edge. And quite a lot of the Canadian system, even though it's government funded, the financial structure of the program is that the government is paying bills from hospitals and clinics, just like the fee-for-service part of a Medicare program here. So yes, it's a single payer, but the financial structure and the nature of the fraud opportunities is not that different. They have some rather peculiar things of their own, too. The Canadian system has a lot of problems with Americans crossing the border, pretending to be Canadians and getting their medical treatment for free on the government. And that's a very peculiar Canadian close-to-the-border phenomenon.
Would you say their percent is as high of medical fraud billings as high as the U.S., where it's at least 10%?
No, I don't think so. I'm not aware of any systematic measurement that they're required to do. But, you know, they have this problem to some extent. So does the Australian Medicare program to some extent. So does the British system in the private pieces of healthcare and delivery there. But I don't think I've got the sense in these other countries that they have anything like the same degree of criminal entrepreneurship that we are seeing here in America.
You've made your mark in this area, Professor Malcolm Sparrow, by talking about systemic changes in the way billing practices are rendered. And I just want to read a short quote from your article in the LA Times a few years ago. Quote, "What makes these health care programs so vulnerable to fake billings and at such a scale?" he asks. "It's not so much the healthcare policy itself, nor the program design. The vulnerability stems from the payment mechanism the government has chosen to use. Most Medicare and Medicaid funds are paid out electronically and automatically in response to electronic claims received from a vast spectrum of providers. Most claims are adjudicated by computers using rule-based systems with no human intervention at all. Fraud perpetrators have only to learn the rules, then they can submit thousands of claims electronically and with relative impunity. If they get things wrong, they'll receive helpful computer-generated messages explaining their mistake. Fraudsters are free to fabricate claims or entire medical episodes because the government systems check for billing correctness, not for truthfulness. The simple rule for get-rich-quick attackers is bill your lies correctly," end quote. How would you comment on that in the light of recent years?
This is becoming a more and more painful truth, and that this applies across a vast range of other federal programs and not just healthcare. It's particularly evident at the moment in tax fraud, which is a similar situation. All of these programs share the characteristic that you can send an electronic claim into a government program, whether it's a fake tax return or a fake healthcare claim or a fake claim for welfare benefits. And there are rules in the federal government, that is treasury rules, that all federal payment programs must be automated. And of course, the reason for that is that they're focusing very much on the processing efficiencies that you get by removing people and replacing them with rule-based systems. There's a very curious development just been announced. One of the areas of the healthcare industry that has been riddled with fraud, we know for a long time, is home healthcare. And CMS has just announced that five states, starting in December, aren't any longer going to allow this, you know, pay on trust with a fully automated system. The home health care agencies, if they want to get paid, are going to have to submit their claims, and they're going to be scrutinized in advance before Medicare pays for them. Now, this is a very odd thing to happen in a sense, because it's turning back the technological clock something like 25 years. That's the way it used to be, that somebody would look at the claims and figure out whether they were justified, and if they had any queries, call them up. And all of that would happen before the payment was made. And of course, the industry now is objecting like crazy that this is unfair and they're being targeted and this will slow everything down and make it all impossible.
Steve Scorvin, this must be blowing your mind. We're talking about a massive business crime wave day after day. Yes. It's hundreds of billions of dollars. How do you react to this? And like everybody, you've gotten these computerized, inscrutable healthcare bills from doctors or hospitals. How do you react as a consumer and listening to this interview?
Well, I want to know who's doing it. Is this grandma and grandpa? Is this organized crime? Is this just bad doctors or secretaries and administrators in the offices? Who are the perpetrators? Who do they tend to be?
We know that it's an extraordinary array of people. Sometimes it's a bad doctor who's greedy. Sometimes it's hospital billing operations with very aggressive MBAs running them, pushing the profit margins. Some of them more recently have been serious organized crime rings, occasionally operated from abroad. We've seen connections with terrorism and human trafficking. The FBI has reported that a lot of traditional drug smuggling gangs are sort of switching their profession to healthcare fraud because it's more lucrative and it's much safer, and you're much less likely to be shot by your competitors. So it really is an extraordinary array. And there's quite a lot of major settlements being made with big corporations and pharmaceutical companies.
Hospital chains and all.
Right, for slightly more sophisticated types of corporate malfeasance. So it is really the whole range. And the second chapter in my book, I think, is called Who Steals? And the answer is you wouldn't believe how many different types of individuals have discovered the vulnerabilities of these programs.
And that book is License to Steal by Professor Malcolm Sparrow. If people want to go in deeper at this before they contact their members of Congress and say, hey, get going here, this is a corporate crime wave and you got to be tough on business crime, not just street crime, who do they contact? Do you have a website, and is there someone in the federal government that they can contact?
You might call your local FBI office, but I think the most central port of call is the Office of Inspector General Fraud Hotline. It's called a fraud hotline, so it ought to be good for this. And the telephone number is 1-800-HHS. That's for Health and Human Services. TIPS, T-I-P-S. If you want that numerically, it's 1-800-447-8477. And they are set up to take complaints about fraud. But as you say, lots of patients, it's a commonplace experience to get an explanation of medical benefits and to see all kinds of things described there that even if you understand them, you're pretty sure that they didn't happen. And it's also quite commonplace for people to try and report that to the government one way or another, or to their insurance company. A lot of people come away with the impression that they don't really seem to care very much, or at least they don't have much capacity to look into it. And so they walk away from that experience even more frustrated.
Before we conclude, when we're talking to Professor Malcolm Sparrow, Harvard University expert on healthcare fraud billing practices and author of the book License to Steal, one more time that hotline for the Federal Inspector General.
1-800-447-8477.
Thank you very much, Professor Sparrow. This is only the beginning of what this country should pay attention to here if they not just want to save taxpayer dollars, but they want to streamline the process systemically in terms of payment mechanisms, whether to Medicare, Medicaid, or to private insurance companies. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and I really appreciate your attention over many, many years to this important question.
And that's our show. Thanks again to our guest today, Professor Malcolm Sparrow, healthcare fraud expert.
Thank you, listeners. I hope you feed back to Professor Malcolm Sparrow and that Inspector General hotline.
Stand up, you've been sitting way too long.